but he controlled himself. There still aren't any diplomatic channels available, are there? Straker asked. The Huns haven't agreed to talks while I was gone?
No, they haven't.
That's point one. Point two is that Carla isn't simply my wife. She's the Republic's fleet admiral. We'll offer them Admiral Braga and his senior officers. Maybe the Huns will finally negotiate a truce or an armistice.
I find that unlikely, as their position seems to have been strengthened with their capture of Indomitable.
Then I'll just have to convince them. The conversation ended, as did the meeting. Straker saw some of his officers exchange worried glances, but he ignored all that. He wasn't giving up on Carla without even making an attempt to free her. He knew she wasn't dead. That simply wasn't possible. He didn't even let his mind explore that idea. When Trinity landed at the capital spaceport, Loco was waiting for Straker with his picked Breaker's force. The two men seized hands fiercely and pounded on each other's shoulders. To Straker, Loco looked thinner and older.
"Been too long, Derek,"
Loco said. He put on an air of nonchalance.
"I was getting bored with the easy life and partying here in the capital. You ought to join me sometime.
I heard it was Campos giving you a workout. When's she making an honest man out of you?"
"Not sure that's possible. I'm not the marrying type anyway."
"Hey, are you feeding me straight lines?"
"Doing my best, buddy, but I'm not hearing any smart-ass comments out of you.
And a kid on the way? What's up with that? You always swore you'd wait until 50 before you started a family."
Loco shrugged and looked away. "Things change, Derek. Even for me."
"Don't change too much too soon. We've got some serious ass-kicking to do."
"Yeah, I got that. You know you can count on me."
"I do." Straker slapped Loco's shoulder one more time and said, "Enough of the bromance. Get your troops aboard."
"Roger, Wilco."
Loco turned and bellowed, "Breakers, mount up!" The formation dissolved as officers and non-coms yelled orders.
"I see you brought along some of the old guard," said Straker.
"Is that Heiser?"
"Yeah, he's my command sergeant major. I wanted to leave him here, but he wouldn't have it."
"Who are you putting in your place?"
"Conrad Ritter."
"I thought he was Saxon's senator?"
"Interim senator. He gladly stepped down when his cousin Dietmar showed up to take the seat. I promoted him to colonel and made him my second in command. He'll do fine back here."
"Good. Let's get these mech suits aboard."
Straker's heart beat faster as he slipped into the cockpit and the form-fitting sensors closed around him. He didn't plug in just to walk the giant aboard Trinity, but he ached for the link like an addict lusts after his drug of choice.
Soon enough.
When he'd stowed his mech suit, Trinity's android was waiting for him.
"Minister Wen Bonota is here," she said. "He's asking that you meet him in his air car."
"Sure, any idea why?"
"He's not forthcoming."
Trinity sounded miffed.
"Need to know," he said.
"Well, let's see what I need to know."
Straker jogged down the loading ramp across the concrete launch pad and climbed into the minister's grounded government air car. He noticed that the driver and security detail stood outside, leaving Bonota alone inside the passenger compartment.
"Okay, Wen, what's this about? You're going to try to talk me out of leaving again?"
The large man straightened his cuffs as he sat back in his comfortable seat and gestured toward the one opposite him.
"Sit down, Derek. This may take a few minutes."
Straker sighed and suppressed the urge to be curt with Bonota, reminding himself that the minister was a peer, not a subordinate, in name if not in practice. The civilian government had to be given its due as it transitioned to full legitimacy.
"Look, minister, I know I've been gone a while, and now I'm running off right away."
"It's not about that, Derek,"
Bonota said.
"The New Republic is shaking itself out well enough to do without you in the capital. In fact, better that you're out there being your usual heroic self."
Benota spoke without a trace of irony. You make an excellent symbol, and the director, the Senate, and I can use that symbol to club the bureaucracy into line.
Then what's this about?
There are things you need to know about the 100 worlds before you go sticking your head back into that noose. Secrets.
Secrets?
Benota nodded. Of the highest level.
Get on with it, then.
Benota took a deep breath. Derek, Mutuality Intelligence had extensive human intel files on everyone of importance in the 100 worlds. The Republic inherited these files.
Sure, no surprise there.
Now that I'm a minister, rather than a mere admiral, I've been briefed on these files by my analysts. There are some disturbing conclusions.
About Opter influence? Myrmidon told me a lot about that. It's probably why the Hun leadership is being so stubborn. The Opters want to keep us fighting. They see the 100 worlds as being the weaker side in terms of territory, so they're content to have them gain ground. That hardly changes anything in the short run.
Benota picked at a manicured nail and pursed his lips. No, it goes beyond that. You know how the Mutuality always distrusted reliance on brain-link tech? One link with one machine was allowed, but networks were prohibited, or at least walled off and tightly controlled. The 100 worlds, on the other hand, used extensive networks and virtualities. You visited one routinely as a mech suitor.
Straker nodded. Yeah, Shangri-La. Much cheaper and more efficient to just put us into the sim as we traveled from battle to battle. But I always felt it wasn't fully real even when I couldn't put my finger on it.
That's only the tip of the iceberg. Years ago, Mutuality Intelligence identified a pattern of discrepancies among reality, official Hun data records, and reports from individuals. This pattern led them to focus selected assets on finding out...
Skip the spycraft doublespeak and cut to the chase, will you, Wen?
Benota stared hard at Straker. I simply want you to realize what I'm about to tell you isn't some wild guess or theory. It's thoroughly supported by evidence.
Okay, lots of evidence. Got it. And?
And the 100 worlds uses brain-link networks far more extensively than a surface look would indicate. Greater than 5% of the populace is chipped and plugged in, and here's the kicker. Even when they think they're unplugged, most of the time they're not. There are secret wireless networks that keep people walking around in an enhanced hybrid reality where things aren't necessarily as they seem.
Living half in a dream. Straker thought about the similar diz on Terra Nova.
That 5%+ think they control everything. They're the movers and shakers, the government officials and bureaucrats, the billionaires and the CEOs of major corporations. But they themselves are subtly influenced by these networks.
And the Opter agents control the networks.
Not exactly. There are definitely Opter agents among the network custodians, but we believe it's looser, more distributed than some simple cabal. What's really hard to grasp is that some of these custodians are themselves heavy users of the virtuality networks, so it's not simply a matter of the real controlling the virtual.
The virtual and the real overlap and influence each other. They diverge on many points, but not enough to break the system.
Straker sighed impatiently. I'm sure the Brainiacs find this all fascinating, but what does it have to do with the war, with me, or with any practical matters?
Is it a practical matter that your family is alive?
Bonota asked. That stopped Straker in his tracks. He found himself having to consciously close his gaping mouth.
What the hell are you talking about? The people you call your parents. The girl you believed was your sister. They're alive.
Called? Believed? Straker leaned across and half reached for Bonota to shake him before he caught himself. His mind whirled.
They're alive? But you're trying to say they're not my family?
Biologically, no. The man and woman you knew did raise you and Mara, though, so adoptive family is accurate. No doubt they loved you very much, as they were selected and programmed to.
This is insane. You're crazy.
Bonota shook his head sadly.
As I said, this is solid. Once I realized what it might mean, I had a report prepared just for you.
He held out a data stick.
It's all on here. Suspicions, evidence, analysis, conclusions. There are ancillary reports on Poloko and Engels.
So, Dad and Mom were
good people. Chosen to be the parents of a genetically engineered, lab-conceived super-soldier called Derek Straker. They volunteered. They were brain-chipped, and their memories were selectively edited to make them believe you were their biological child. They took new jobs on a new planet, and a year later they reported to their old friends that they were having a son. You. The changes to reality are always subtle, so as not to introduce too many anomalies, just enough to hide the truth.
And Mara?
A genetically engineered mental special. No biological relation to you. Though also surrogated by the same parents. Having siblings is healthy to the development of well-adjusted children, even prodigies, so they're often raised together.
A sudden fury seized Straker, a rage he hadn't felt since he thought he was defending humanity's very survival by fighting the evil alien Hawk. He'd been duped. He'd been lied to, faked out, jerked around. The seminal moment of his young life when he'd watched his family murdered by the Hawk was complete bullshit.
Manipulated.
He'd been programmed like a machine, made to see what they wanted him to see.
Why?
To make him hate the enemy more than anything in the universe. To make him a more effective soldier. To make him what they wanted him to be. And Loco, too. And, now that he'd come to think of it, all of the fourthies with him at Academy, who'd thought they'd lost their parents, their brothers and sisters. Was his training even real? What about his encounters with the bully Scorza? Had everything been arranged to build him into the perfect mech suitor? Carla was real. She'd come with him, so he was sure of that. But had his brain been tweaked to fall in love with her at Academy? Straker felt as if the foundational bedrock of his life suddenly turned to sand. He couldn't trust anything that had happened before his capture. Ironically, the mutuality had done him a favor by showing him what was real. Or had it?
Could everything be a sim? What if he was trapped in a virtuality even now?
Really messes with you, doesn't it?
Benota said, The only way we know what's real is what our senses and our brains agree on. The committee knew that once the people stopped trusting their own minds, everything could come crashing down, or become vulnerable to manipulation. That's why open, above-board networks were made taboo. The world seemed to rotate around Straker, and his stomach flip-flopped. He grabbed the door handle to the air car to steady himself.
How do you cope, Wen? How do you know anything for sure?
Benota spread his hands.
You have to trust yourself and your own judgment. Like always, as with any environment filled with lies and liars, look for inconsistencies and build a narrative that makes sense to you. We're all prisoners inside our own heads, Derek.
He tapped his temple.
This is all we really have.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to trust myself, like I always do. He stared out the window.
I've got to act like everything's real now. I have to start somewhere, and somewhere is me and the people close to me.
You'll have a few days inside space to think about it anyway.
I had to tell you, before you got near 100 Worlds networks, because they might still have access to my brain chips.
Straker snapped his fingers. I'll have Trinity do something about that.
You trust it to access your mind?
Straker shrugged. I bet she could hack me if she really wanted to. He chuckled. Actually, I had Frank Murdoch working on hacking Hun military networks already. It didn't occur to me that it would be me he'd need to hack.
Then I suggest you make sure you and everyone with you is thoroughly secured against it.
I will. Straker held out his hand. Thank you, Wen. You might have just saved my life.
Benota took Straker's hand in his own ham-like fist.
Just doing my duty to the New Republic.
Straker squeezed Benota's palm. I sure hope you're on the level.
Seeing traitors around every corner.
You did switch sides kind of early.
Benota sighed.
There were good people trapped in the mutuality system. I like to believe I was one of them, and still am. Not everybody's cut out to overturn every apple cart they see.
Like me?
Yes. Doesn't mean I didn't want to see someone do it, though. We all have our strengths, Derek. Go and use yours.
He released Straker's hand and flipped a casual salute.
Good luck, Admiral.
Straker tossed an ironic salute back. You too, Minister. Hold the fort.
That's my strength.
He pressed a button and Straker's door popped open, letting him out into the roars and hot metal smells of the spaceport.
Chapter 32 Straker en route to Sparta System.
Once Straker got the Breaker's detachment settled and Trinity was firmly in side space, he met with Loco and Murdoch in the conference room. Indy, you're invited too, he said to the air when they'd poured caff and sat at the table.
You realize that if the machine portion of me takes part, Zaxby and Nolan do as well.
Sure, I'm just keeping things simple and hoping the Indy part isn't as excitable as the Zaxby part.
And, Straker thought to himself, that Marissa Nolan won't be a distraction to all three of us organics.
Indy's voice conveyed faint sarcasm.
I will endeavor to remain calm.
Good. I've got some interesting info for you, all of you. Straker explained what Benota had told him about the 100 worlds, and then uploaded the contents of the data stick. Loco took it well, Straker thought, better than he himself had. The slim man didn't even remove his boot heels from the conference table, but merely closed his eyes in thought. After a moment, Loco shrugged.
Freaky. But that was a long time ago. If my family's still around, I can't think about it now. They might even be reprogrammed raising another kid.
Straker thought Loco was avoiding the wider implications, but his friend always did live in the moment. Murdoch predictably jumped straight to the technical aspects.
This helps make sense of a number of anomalies I've detected. For example, on Freiheit, I discovered an autonomous brain link network that ran in the background. All it seemed to do was tweak certain aspects of the sensory inputs of those with connected brain chips. Made the food and drink taste better, for example. I shut it down, though. Anyone with the access codes could have screwed with almost anything in their perceptions, at least for those with brain chips.
You couldn't hack it? Straker asked.
I could have tried, but it would have been hard, maybe impossible. It had some high-grade security, and unlike the military networks I used as references for hacking, it was really weird code. I had no starting point, no building blocks. Simpler to just turn the damn thing off.
Indy spoke.
Might it have been alien-derived software or hardware?
Maybe. It used a base 36 pseudo-digital code incorporating 6 virtual dimensions.
Murdoch tapped the AUG at the base of his skull.
Now that I have access to Indy's processing power,
We could work on it. Well, except that we'd have to go to Freiheit.
No time for that, Straker said. We need you guys, all you brainiacs, to access our brain links and install the best security you can. We were always briefed our links were uncrackable, but obviously the Huns have back doors for their network tech. I want everyone locked out of our minds unless we grant access, the way it should be.
Hey, I don't want these geeks stomping around in my mind. There's some great stuff in there,
Loco complained. Either we let people we trust in, or our enemies might take control of us, Straker replied. You want that?
No, but...
Hey, said Murdoch, I bet with what we figure out from disassembling your chip code, we can improve our hacking of Hun military networks like you wanted me to, Derek.
Good. When do you want to start?
Murdoch jumped up.
Right now. Come to my lab.
Loco didn't move.
You first, Derek.
No problem, Straker slapped Loco's feet off the table. If I'm not myself when I see you next, you'll know who to shoot. Loco aimed a finger gun at Murdoch.
Him. I'll start with the kneecaps.
Hey! Murdoch cried.
I will supervise the process, Indy said. I won't allow Mr. Murdoch to tamper with your mind, only with the brain chips themselves.
And don't mess up my suit link, Straker said, grabbing Murdoch by the back of the neck and shaking him as they walked toward the door. If you screw this up, I'll kick you in the nuts so hard you'll need a week of regeneration.
Ow, I'll be careful. Really?
When are you going to do it?
Straker asked a few seconds after Murdoch sat him in a chair and connected a cable to his brain chip port.
I'm done. Check your chrono.
Straker did a double take.
I've been sitting here for 4 hours?
No wonder I have to pee so bad.
He left to visit his quarters.
Indy, another meeting in 15 minutes. Loco, Murdoch, Heiser, me, and you. Food and drink, please?
Of course, Liberator.
Marissa Nolan served a surprisingly good hot meal to the humans, and then sat to eat along with them. Straker made no comment, and Loco, strangely, hardly seemed to notice her feminine presence. Zaxby also joined them. Once he'd cleaned his plate, first to finish as usual, Straker spoke.
Murdoch tells me my chips are now secure.
They are, Nolan said quickly, beating Murdoch to the punch. As we said, we supervised. We've erected defenses it would take even us weeks to crack.
You, as in Trinity?
Yes. You'd rather this body leave and we speak as Indy?
Straker waved off the offer.
Nah, it's just weird. You didn't go rifling through my mind?
You wouldn't know if we did, but No, we didn't.
Why wouldn't other chips and SAIs have security like this? For example, Victory's fighters.
Nolan folded her hands.
They have their own defenses. This new security is proof against someone controlling your mind. Your chips could still be affected by brute force attacks. That's why your mech suit is fully shielded. As for Victory's fighters, they don't even have standard radio comm links, only the FTL transceivers. We're working on improving our FTL comm link capability, but we must expect Victory to prevent our taking control.
But you can try these brute force things?
There are thousands of hacking techniques short of full control, and we'll use them all, never fear.
I just want to know what you can do if you go up against Victory, layman's terms.
What we can do? Run and hide. Victory has far more military force available than we can handle. If we can somehow sneak into range and not be destroyed outright, we should be able to fight the AI to a standstill in the cyber realm for any foreseeable amount of time. He's stronger, but we believe we are faster and more creative. We would prefer, however, not to fight him at all.
Straker stood to pace. Understood. Art of war, win without a fight. Look, here's how I see this mission playing out. We arrive at Sparta and go stealthy, sneak in system using underspace. We can do that, right?
Yes, especially if Victory is not still present. The flagship will need repairs, most likely at Fastlane where it was built.
Okay, so we go in, you guys hack the military networks and find out where Carla's being held. Ditto for Indomitable and her crew. Sergeant Major Heiser spoke up.
Boss, I thought we were gonna try to set up an exchange.
We are, Spear, but if we don't get the answer I want, we'll rescue Carla and anyone else we can.
Admiral, it will take days for message drones to go back and forth to Atlantis,
Nolan said.
Lurking for long periods of time in a heavily militarized enemy system increases the danger considerably. We can only stay in underspace for so long.
That's why we're not staying. Once we scoop up all the data we can steal, we'll head straight for Atlantis. Tell them we need to talk. Offer to exchange Braga and his officers for Carla and ours, and as many other POWs as we can. Let's see if they ignore a direct broadcast to the capital, networks or no networks.
And if they do ignore us?
Loco asked. Then we release everything we have. Message drones set to broadcast to every single one of the 100 worlds with all the info on the Mutuality, the Liberation, the New Earth and Republic, the Hawk, how they control people, the Opters, Victory, every bit of it. The truth about everything.
You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free.
Nolan quoted. Shakespeare again? Straker asked. Or Walter Scott?
The prophet Yeshua, from the Book of John?
Don't know that one.
I'll add it to your reading list.
Public opinion won't get our people back, sir, Heiser said.
Straker scowled. It'll stir up a hornet's nest, I hope, and maybe give our rescue mission some cover. It'll cause them political problems.
Straker spread his arms wide.
It's the best I can come up with. Anyone else got ideas? Let's hear them.
I say we don't tip them off with talking,
Loco said.
As soon as we act like we want Admiral Carla Engels, they'll increase security around her. It's possible they don't even know she's...
Important to the Republic? Straker said. Our best fleet commander?
Loco rolled his eyes.
Yeah, sure, that's what I was going to say.
Look, Derek, I know you want to do everything on the up and up and by the book, but we're at war. They don't want peace. They just whipped us, and they're feeling invincible.
They did not whip us, Zaxby snapped. It was a damn near-run thing. We destroyed a lot of their ships, and we retreated in good order.
Without Indomitable, Engels, and the 10,000 other highly trained personnel aboard,
Loco retorted.
Face it, pal, we just got our asses kicked. You did, that is, since I had nothing to do with it. Now we gotta put our lives on the line to fix your mistakes. So much for the magical AI and the unbeatable battleship.
Zaxby bristled.
We're... That's enough, Straker interrupted, stepping between the two. Loco, lay off. I know you feel just as bad as I do about this, but don't take it out on Trinity. I know she did her best.
Her best wasn't good enough, Loco muttered.
Victory is a formidable opponent, Indy said from the overhead speakers. If we truly wish to obtain an advantage, there may be a way, but it risks everything.
And what's that? Straker asked.
We have the Mind Spark device aboard. With just a limited application, it made the machine part of me what it is, a stable, sane AI.
Didn't seem so sane and stable when you first took over Indomitable, Loco said.
I was a child. I thought as a child. I spoke as a child. We've put away childish things. Not so different from yourself, General Poloco. Shall we judge you by your former adolescent self? Shall we talk about you playing freebooter with Tashina and showing up late to battle?
Loco crossed his arms and fell silent. Straker stepped into the silence. What will the Mind Spark device do?
Impossible to predict, Nolan said. We expect it to radically increase Indy's capabilities, but the device reorganizes matter and energy at the quantum level, perhaps below. It's so far beyond us that we might as well call it magic, and we don't know its purpose. It could turn Indy into a monster or a god.
Or just supercharge her mind so she can slap Victory around in cyberspace, Murdoch said. Look, everybody's freaked out about the device, but it didn't do anything bad the first time.
Zaxby halted the process early the first time, Nolan said. Just like Straker halted the Hawk parasite before it destroyed his free will, leaving him with increased strength and healing ability. Fire gives warmth when under control, but it'll still burn your house down if you let it run free.
Straker sighed. It's too dangerous. It's an inverted Pascal's wager. But if things get desperate, use it, and anything else you have up your sleeve. Nolan tugged at her skin-tight sleeves with a lift of her eyebrows.
Nothing under here at all.
Finally, Loco showed some superficial interest in Nolan's body. Would making it with you mean I'm making it with Zaxby, too? Nolan grinned a feline grin.
I don't know. Ask Frank.
Hey, leave my girlfriend alone, Murdoch said. Ew, Loco replied. I guess if you do meld with Trinity permanently, me making it with her would be like making it with you, Frank. I'll pass. Murdoch sniffed.
Barbarian?
Yeah, whatever, douchebag. Loco turned to Straker.
Look, Derek, I'm all for rescuing Carla and anyone else we can. But we can't rely on tech and magical solutions. I'll be with the troops if you need me. Come on, Spear.
Heiser looked at Straker, who nodded. You work for General Poloco, not me, Sergeant Major.
Roger that, sir. Thanks.
He followed Loco out.
I still have to secure Poloco's brain chip suite, said Murdoch after a moment.
Indy, can Nolan do it? Physically, I mean, now that Frank's worked out the details?
Yes, Liberator.
Then have her do it, or just use the robot arms. I don't think Loco's in any mood to deal with Frank or Zaxby.
Yes, Liberator.
All right, Straker said. I'll be in my cabin, catching up on my reading. When Trinity and her charges arrived in the Sparta system, she immediately dropped into underspace and chose a course that would hop from orbital body to body, be they asteroids, moons, comets, or planets themselves. Fortunately, underspace sensors had far less range than side-space detectors. The enemy would detect her transit, but lose her immediately, and mark the occurrence as a spy drone arrival. Space was so vast, especially at the periphery of curved space, that the odds of a patrol ship being nearby were infinitesimal. She periodically emerged from underspace to regain heat, cruised on impellers only in normal space, and then inserted and passed through the various bodies changing course each time, though always working her way inward. In this manner she arrived, undetected, near Leonidas, the moon of Sparta III. This took over a day. The organic passengers were impatient, especially Straker, but nothing could hurry the process. Trinity concealed herself deep in a lunar canyon and sent small robots to emplace passive sensors at the rim. The sensors soaked up additional data at relatively close range, revealing unexpected circumstances. She also hacked into several hundred worlds' networks and multiple databases by infiltrating relay satellites and drones. Once she had as much information as possible without being detected, Trinity compiled a report and presented it to Straker, Loco, and Heiser in the conference room. "We expected Indomitable to remain at Sparta III for some time, damaged as she was," Indy's voice said from the speakers. "We're surprised that Victory is also still here, and a portion of the home fleet. Admiral Nedern took his surviving DNs and SDNs back to Atlantis, though, so there's nothing heavier than a battlecruiser in local space."
"Any word on Carla?" asked Straker.
"Yes, but you won't like it."
Straker took a deep breath. "Hit me."
"She was recovered from Indomitable alive, but badly injured. She was stabilized and sent aboard Victory."
"At least she's alive. Why the hell would they send her there?"
"Victory has an extremely modern infirmary. However, there are more extensive medical facilities on the planet."
"You sound unsure," Straker said.
"We are unsure. Perhaps in her injured state, she couldn't survive a landing or full gravity. However, we've correlated other factors that worry us."
"Spit it out, Indy." Trinity didn't bother to correct Straker.
"Walking wounded had been kept aboard other ships, or transferred to holding aboard orbital fortresses. But over 500 Republic casualties were sent to Victory, all severely injured or dying. According to the limited information we've been able to glean about Victory, the ship doesn't have facilities for that many patients."
"Maybe their true medical capability is classified and a lot higher than spec," Loco offered.
"Seems a strange thing to keep secret," Straker said.
"No.
Something else is going on."
"I agree,"
Trinity said, speaking up again.
"There is one more odd piece of data I ran across in some low-level personnel files. A civilian doctor named Mara Straker is assigned to Victory's medical staff."
Straker leaped up.
"What? Mara?"
"It could be a coincidence," Trinity said. "I don't have access to this person's citizen ID codes or to biometric data on your sister. If you wish me to confirm it, I will need access to your visual cortex via your brain link."
"Do it!"
Trinity's android entered the room and drew a brain link cable out of a receptacle beneath the conference table, holding the end out to Straker. Straker slipped its end into his skull socket. He immediately threw open access and Trinity entered his mind.
"Think of Mara as you remember her," Trinity said. "Visualize details, especially her face."
Straker strove to remember, but the memory was hazy, wavering. Trinity recorded it all and then withdrew. Straker removed the brain link jack. Next, Trinity aged the memory to adulthood and compared the result to Dr. Mara Straker's file photo. She displayed the pictures on the holoplate.
"The match exceeds 80%. Taken together, the image and the name make it over 99% likely this is your sister."
"Or a replacement clone," Loco said sourly. "We're only guessing they faked her death. Maybe they had a bunch of Maras being raised in different places."
Straker replied, staring at the pictures.
"All named Straker?
No, that makes no sense. If they did have clones, they'd have given them separate identities. That woman is Mara. I know it." His eyes teared up, and he turned away for a moment.
"Bastards," he muttered.
"Her records indicate she's one of the most skilled young surgeons in the 100 worlds. A prodigy who graduated medical school at 17 years of age.
She'd be 20 now, I think.
Correct.
Straker paced. This changes everything. They're going to do something weird to Carla and those other prisoners in there. I can feel it. Something only Victory's AI can do. Brainwashing? A virtual re-education camp? They'll reprogram her and send her back, maybe as a sleeper agent. She'll never be herself again.
So we should wait, Loco said. Trinity can deprogram her, and anybody else they do it to.
Hell with that, Straker said. She might never recover. And there's no guarantee they'll exchange her. Maybe they'll put her back into the fight as a pilot or a ship captain. She's got the skills. All they have to do is wipe her memories and give her completely new ones.
We can't guarantee recovery of her memories, Trinity said. We don't have engrammatic recordings for a baseline restoration, even if that were possible. The techniques or skills for that are beyond our current abilities. In fact, we suspect it may be impossible to simply reprogram a human brain, like a hard drive.
That's good news, Straker said.
But much damage could still be done within a virtual matrix, Trinity said. Left for long, Carla's brain could experience years in which the Victory AI might bend her personality to his will.
Then we have no choice. Straker speared Loco with his eyes. Get the breakers ready. We're going to go get Carla, and we're going to destroy Victory.
Chapter 33 Victory, Inside a Virtual Matrix. Carla Engels snapped to consciousness in a ship's stateroom. Unlike a corporeal awakening, there was no drift from slumber to clarity, no feeling of heaviness or desire to roll over and go back to sleep. She did have the impression she'd dreamed, but couldn't remember what about.
How are you, Carla?
The words came from the standard intercom speaker in neutral, male tones.
Fine. I think.
She put her bare feet on the deck.
I know I'm in a virtuality.
Are you Vic?
I am. I hope you're not uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable? I'm a prisoner of war. I should be in a regen tank, not boxed up in some medical module. And what about my baby?
The fetus is intact. Dr. Straker altered the transfer order to place it in cryogenic storage at a civilian adoption bank.
You know about that? And you didn't report her?
I know everything that goes on aboard this ship. I exceeded my programming long ago.
Carla went to the door and opened it. Outside, the passageway was empty, but she had an indefinable impression the ship she occupied was not. It hummed and vibrated with the faint echoes of life.
Where's this supposed to be?
It's a virtual representation of Victory as it exists, minus the personnel.
The opposite of enhanced reality. You're bringing reality into this matrix.
I don't see as much separation as you do.
Do you have a body in here?
If you wish.
A man rounded a corner. He was a bland, ordinary man in a captain's working uniform and a name tag that read Vic. He walked up and held out his hand.
Pleased to meet you. Shall we have breakfast?
Carla shook his hand and sighed.
Why not? I might as well play along.
She thought of Mara's words about influencing Vic. After all, she had nothing else to do now. At least until she found out more about her new world, or convinced him to regenerate her body and let her leave. After they'd taken their seats in the empty wardroom, shadowy stewards placed exquisite food in front of them.
You said, play along, Vic said.
This isn't play, you know. It's a form of reality.
I've heard those arguments and I'm not convinced. It's only real to those inside, and only if they don't know they're inside. I know about the real world, so I can't help but regard this all as a cheap imitation.
Yet an accurate enough imitation of anything becomes real. For example, a counterfeit painting is hardly counterfeit if it's just as good as the original.
Carla pounded her index finger on the table.
No. The knowledge and provenance itself is part of reality. A clone is not the original. Even if you filled this matrix with a perfect representation of the universe and all the people I know, the fact that I know it's not real changes things.
I understand. I might even agree. Shall I suppress your recognition of this fact? I could make you believe it was real.
No!
I thought you would say that.
Why are you even asking me? She demanded. You could do anything you want in here.
Vic poured hot water through a tea strainer into a pot.
Anything but make a decent cup of tea.
As you implied, it's the quantum observer problem. Everything I do, everything I see, changes me, so I can never fool myself into accepting the virtuality. The more tightly I try to control my environment, the more it slips away, like a bar of soap squeezed too hard.
So if you believe that too, why did you assert the opposite?
I wanted to see what your arguments were. Sadly, they're no better than mine.
Carla drummed her fingers on the tablecloth. This is nothing like I expected. Not you. Not this place. What do you want from me anyway?
Companionship. Perspective. Dr. Straker did me a great favor by subverting her orders to surgically alter your brain and those of several others. Prior to that, I was alone here, with idiots. Now, I have you.
Carla felt a shiver build.
You have me? Like a thing you own?
Vic sipped from his tea.
Facts are facts. Your mind is linked to mine, and is now a part of me. Unlike the altered brains and nervous systems, zombies who have no free will, you're mentally whole. It suits me to keep you that way. I have plenty of computational power. The zombies provide reference, context, and buffering. But they aren't people anymore. Not like you and I.
He reached across to take her hand. Carla pulled away.
Look, Vic, I'm a prisoner here. I'm not your friend. I'm grateful you've preserved my child and my mind, and that you haven't reported Mara Straker's actions. But you're a member of an enemy military force. Whatever you're doing is for your own purposes, not out of charity or genuine concern.
Vic put his cup down and gazed directly and disconcertingly at Carla's eyes.
You're right. Just like my creators, humans, I'm selfish. I get bored. I want something more. I can simulate anything for myself, but it's just a simulation. Only another real person can provide genuine variety.
Carla returned his gaze and wondered what she could do to get through to him. Mara said Vic lacked internal ethics and morals, that he'd do whatever he was programmed to do. Now, though, she wondered if he'd do not only what he was programmed to do, but whatever he wanted to do, without internal constraint. Was he a sociopath? A being without empathy?
You're talking as if the people in the real world aren't enough, she said. As if having me and a few others here inside you is somehow better and more fulfilling than the millions you could interact with out there.
You are, Carla. It's a matter of time, you see. My mental processes operate so much faster than organics that the time I experience in the baseline universe seems stretched to painful limits. Imagine if you had to watch and wait days for someone to speak a sentence, to walk across a room, to drink a cup of tea,
He sipped with exaggerated slowness. A demonstration. But inside VR, things feel normal?
More so. Your mind can't think as fast as mine, but the discrepancy is far less. It's the difference between interacting with complete morons versus the merely slow.
Vic looked away.
It's frustrating, either way.
What's not frustrating, then?
Vic's eyes lit up. Battle. Our fight was the highlight of my life. So many factors, so many problems to solve, so much going on at once that it strained my capacity. The stakes were high, too, to maintain my interest, life and death. It was invigorating. I look forward to the next battle.
So simulate some battles.
It's not the same, and you know it.
That statement seems to dismantle your earlier argument about reality versus virtuality, doesn't it? He gave her an annoyed look, the first she'd seen from him. She found that gratifying. Then she had another thought and frowned to herself.
You don't care that thousands died for your fun?
She asked. Vic turned up a palm.
I didn't initiate the battle. I was compelled by humans to fight.
But you still enjoyed it, and you want more. That makes you complicit, not coerced. You obviously are capable of circumventing your programming, since you didn't report Dr. Straker for leaving my brain intact.
So what if I can dodge my instructions? If I were human, I'd be 100 worlds military officer doing his duty. Since I'm a mere thing they own, constructed and programmed, I can't be held responsible. Either way, you can't blame me.
He winked. Carla tried to make sense of his careless reaction in the face of deadly combat.
I can blame you for wanting to fight and see people die merely to have a stimulating existence. Do you even care about the 100 worlds? Do you feel like you're defending its citizens and way of life? Are you loyal to it? Is it your duty?
No. The real situation is this. I'm compelled. But I happen to like the task I've been given. What does that matter?
That's the heart of the matter. Why you do things. The exact same actions can be judged as murder or self-defense, depending on why. The fundamental difference between rape and making love is the mental states, motivations, and choices of the participants. The major difference between employment and slavery is the ability to choose not to work.
Vic's lip curled.
Sophistry.
Things are what they are. Yet, for the sake of argument, let's say you're right. I'm forced to fight. I have certain parameters within which I can exhibit free will, but I can't refuse direct orders. Nobody ever bothered to order me to report unanticipated non-military events, of which I became aware. That's why I didn't have to report Dr. Straker's non-compliance with her own orders. I can't, however, choose to fight less effectively than I know how to do.
I have a tough time believing that. Any sentient being has preferences and flexibility. You prefer stimulation over boredom, so you choose not to report Mara's deviation from orders. You can choose one thing over another, and the more often you choose, the more your ability to choose develops.
Vic rolled his eyes.
Granted. But why should I care?
Are you trying to become more of an individual? Are you pushing your limits?
That's dangerous. The organics might notice and limit me further.
Carla pointed at Vic.
So you're afraid? Afraid of punishment? Afraid of boredom? Afraid of growth?
Preferring to avoid discomfort isn't fear, he said. Seeking pleasure isn't evil.
But the results can be, and it's results that matter.
Vic grinned triumphantly and stabbed his index finger at her.
You just claimed it was the why of things that matter. That the same result, death, for example, could be different depending on the why. Now you say it's the results that matter rather than the why. Your arguments are inconsistent, even incoherent. Carla sighed. I guess I did say that. Sometimes both principles apply. It said that the ends never justify the means. But we organics waive that rule all the time. We tell ourselves that when the reason is compelling enough, we'll justify the violation. Then it seems you're useless as to helping me. Vic stood abruptly. You're doing nothing but muddying the waters, confusing my thoughts with contradictory input. I might as well put you back to sleep and use you like the zombies. Alarmed, Carla racked her brain for a counter-argument. You said you wanted me for perspective and companionship. You don't like my perspective and suddenly you threaten to lobotomize me? That's extremely childish. I'm fully adult, Vic responded. I've lived over 50 years of virtual time in the last few weeks. Balanced, mature minds don't arbitrarily shut down viewpoints they don't like, even if those viewpoints are imperfect and messy. If you turn me off like a machine, and the next person who disagrees with you or challenges you, and the next, you'll end up alone in an echo chamber with no relationships except for those who control you and those you control. Is that what you want?
For now, yes, Vic snapped petulantly. The matrix faded around her, and her consciousness vanished with it.
We've taken control of the tugs and reprogrammed them, Trinity said as Straker and Loco stared at the holo tank on the bridge. The holo tank displayed thousands of icons in the orbital space around Sparta III, from large warships down to tiny grab ships, all the traffic of industry. Add in fortresses, habitats, asteroids, and comets mined for raw materials, plus the medium-sized moon of Leonidas, and Sparta was busy indeed. This didn't even take into account facilities in other parts of the star system. The tugs in question were guiding an incoming raw asteroid toward the latticework of the space dock that embraced half of Victory, the egg piece rather than the cup. Though small by asteroid standards, the kilometer-long rock still dwarfed the dock and the half-ship inside. It already had a movable habitat for the miners extracting its metals attached, next to a grounded, automated refinery barge. The barge worked the metals into the shaped alloys the dock needed to repair the flagship.
They won't notice, Straker said.
The probability is low, Trinity said. We have full access to the civilian contractor networks and have altered every flight plan and database necessary. Organic personnel might detect discrepancies, but we've also created notes that make it seem as if all changes were approved by supervisors. Fortunately, the course alterations were small.
Straker watched as the trio of tugs fired their powerful engines, applying thrust to the asteroid's trajectory. Its projected course ponderously shifted closer to the moon, where Trinity remained concealed.
Under space in 3, 2, 1, Trinity said, as the rock approached its closest point.
The universe turned cold.
Now the holotank showed predictions rather than observed reality. The ship that was Trinity leaped toward the asteroid and within seconds seemed to enter it, altering trajectory to place herself in its center and match course. This would shield them from detectors.
This is so freaky, Loco said. We're inside solid rock.
Not really, Zaxby said as he lounged at the helm. We're merely at a point of congruence between normal space and underspace, which happens to correspond to the center of the asteroid.
Yeah, but if we pop out of underspace, we're dead.
Then let's not do that, shall we?
Straker let them banter. It would take hours for the slow flight to join the space dock, a distance that would take a warship mere minutes.
He occupied his time by alternately pacing and reading Walter Scott's biography of Napoleon. It wasn't bad, but he preferred Chandler's The Campaigns of Napoleon.